talk, big opinions, the panel.
And joining us on the panel this morning out of the Hawke's Bay, the sunny Hawke's Bay, Hamish Bidwell. How are you, Hamish?
It's grey, mate, which is good because I've got to go and cover some cricket tonight and I don't really want to. I'd rather have a beer, so look, I could get fresh.
I was going to say next Wednesday you've got an ODI there. What's we know what's going to happen on Wednesday, don't we, in Napier?
Oh, you put me on the spot. Who's playing?
The White Ferns in Bangladesh.
Yeah, I think I'll give that a miss. I have no idea what the weather's doing and good luck to them. Yeah.
Good luck to them indeed. Also joining us out of the capital, Daniel McCarty. G'day, mate. How are you?
Morning, Rick Dogg. Good to speak to you. And Bitters, it's been too long.
Far too long. I tell you, boys, I had a multi the other day. You won't believe this. First leg of the multi. I know you're both Wellington fans, or Wellington originally, and I had your Firebirds up against Canterbury. I had Ruchan Ravindra off the back of his century last game out to be top scorer. And he went out for 14. He was the first wicket down, and then I was like, "Oh, that's me toast." But then the mighty Firebirds collapsed, and at the end of the day, Ruchan Ravindra was the top scorer for Wellington on 14 runs. So I was still alive.
That is magnificent. But as covered a few Wellington collapses over the years, we're quite used to them in these parts.
Yes, indeed. Gentlemen,
I was told I used to cause them because I was such a negative bastard. I think that's absolutely overstated.
I'll ask Grant on Saturday, Hamish, shall I? You know the answer.
Oh, please don't, because I know his answer, but cheers.
Yeah, boys, too good, too good. Hey, how much of a cell phone have Cricket Australia created around this David Warner situation? Like, you know, my initial reaction was when David Warner threw his toys out because they wanted to have a public hearing on it, that I was like, well, how guilty are you and what else don't we know? But now I think we're starting to find out some of the things we didn't know, like claiming that Cricket Australia administrators were telling the team to do ball temper and do whatever it takes to win, Hamish.
I think we knew that. I can remember an Ashes test in Perth where they got it to go reverse after 30 overs and Stuart Broad was going, well, how are they achieving that? Like, the reverse swing bowling since the sandpaper thing has basically left the game, and it's left the game because we're not allowing people to cheat, as Warner was cheating. And everyone knows it, and it was an orchestrated campaign and tactic, and the bowlers would go, oh, I don't know, they just handed me the ball, I don't know anything about it. And so there's a few strands to that. So, like, let's be fair. There was ball tampering, and if they want to expose that, then great. I don't doubt they had the stomach for it. The other part is the Warners themselves, who are the greatest cry bullies going. Like, he's lucky to be playing international cricket at all, let alone, in his own mind, be considered to be the captain of Australia. That's laughable. And I don't want to hear from him, and I don't want to hear from his wife. And if his manager wants to pipe up and throw a few stones, then chuck all the stones. Do you know what I mean? Be a man and tell it. Don't make us cry river on David's behalf, because he's the most unsympathetic character I can imagine. And, you know, if we want to be fair dinkum, cool, do ball tampering, but I don't want to hear from the Warners.
No, I'm with you on that. I got that impression of them after the Phil Hughes incident, Daniel, when Phil Hughes passed away, and he, I don't know how much money he made, all the Warners made, selling that story to 60 Minutes, where he cried on camera for about an hour and talked about how horrible and terrible it was. And then the very next series, he's telling people, session one, I'm going to break your arm. I had no time for the bloke after that. What's your experience been?
Threaten to break someone's arm?
Well, I think he was. Warner was vice captain and at the heart of all of it, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, I'm going to be the dissenting voice here. What did David Warner do wrong in the eyes of the ICC? They ball tampered, right?
Yep.
I don't think anyone can argue that. The absolute laughable attempted cover up in the immediate aftermath was pathetic and probably exacerbated matters. But does the punishment really fit the crime? The ICC's match suspensions for ball tampering at the time were a couple of games. In all honesty, should someone receive a life ban for something of that? That's something I've always struggled with. I just don't like the idea of life bans as a rule. Steve Smith's a great example. He was in the wilderness. He was able to through acts of contrition, to work his way back into that realm. Now, has David Warner done enough of that? That, I think, we can question. Is he the right man for the job at 36 years of age? I think that is a point we can argue. But it doesn't sit overly comfortably with me banning a guy from for life, essentially, for something that is pretty widespread and, according to the rules of the game, doesn't come more than a couple of weeks' ban.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're not banning him from cricket. They're just banning him from being the captain. I don't have an issue with that because a lot that came out of that on top of not only the ball tampering was how much of a bully in the dressing room David Warner was.
Yeah, and that's fair. And that could certainly be played out in a suspension more like Steve Smith, I'll repeat, who was only banned for a couple of years before being welcomed back in. So I have little sympathy, though, for them overall. As Hamish did point out, how on earth did others not go down with the ship? Is this just beggars belief? What, you're going to tamper a ball and not tell the bowlers? I think they should have come out in unison as a team. So, yeah, we're all involved and probably all cop a couple of weeks suspension. And I think now in 2022 would be far, far, far down the road from this rather than opening old wounds. And I'm not sure the manager of David Warner coming out and accusing unnamed people in Cricket Australia, unnamed, for encouraging them to ball tamper is going to help things. It's just going to make this the story for the days to come. And Australia at what? In a powerful position in a test match. No one's going to talk about that game as a result.
No, you're not wrong there. I guess the big question, Hamish, is are Mitre 10 going to include sandpaper in their beach cricket sets again this Christmas?
Well, these are good questions. I'd like to know what's on Craig Brathwaite's hands, the West Indies captain. I mean, like Warner had his hands taped up for years. The whole idea with them formalising a ban for him was silly. There are lots of people in lots of codes with never to be captain penciled in next to their name because they're unsuitable for a variety of reasons. And he's one of those dudes, you know. Like, you don't bowl up to Rohit Sharma in an ODI in Sydney and say, hey, mate, you speak English here, speak English. Like, that's just offensive. And you can't have, in a position where some diplomacy is required and some statesmanship is required, a bogan, if I can put it that way, like David Warner in charge, that just embarrasses everyone.
Mm. Yeah, 100%. 100%, gentlemen.
He's not captaincy material, 100%, right? I think we're all in agreement of that.
Mm-hmm.
But they have given him a place to argue by banning him for life. Because it sounds pretty draconian, doesn't it, fellas? You can't do it ever, no matter what you do from here on in. I'm not sure that's the greatest idea with regards to seeking some form of rehabilitation, because they wanted to change how they went about it. They wanted to sort of bring about some sort of positive change. And to his credit, he's kept pretty quiet over the last couple of years. I'm sure the burning David Warner is on the inside wanting to come out, but hasn't.
No, I wonder whether or not we will get a... Well, I don't wonder. I know we'll get a book. It'll just be interesting to see what's actually in the book and how much of a martyr he is when he finally hangs up the bat.
Big talk, big opinions, the panel. Talk
to me, yeah. 27 away from 11, Hamish Bidwill and Daniel McCarty with us on the panel today. And gentlemen, yesterday we saw the unveiling of Dame Patsy Reddy as the first female New Zealand rugby chair. What was your reaction to her naming, Daniel?
Sorry, I was just being invaded by two little rugrats, Ricardo. Completely missed the question.
All right. No, I was just saying the appointment of Dame Patsy Reddy as the first female chair of New Zealand rugby. What was your take on that? What was your reaction when you heard that news?
Well, I probably had more of a reaction when she was initially appointed back in, eight, nine months ago, if I'm not mistaken, to the board itself. But it is a big step up. And this person just reeks of competency. If you look at her career path, of course, former Governor General, lawyer, partner of a law firm, you know, hold multiple directorships in her career, chaired New Zealand Film Commission, chief negotiator, the Treaty of Waitangi. We've also seen what major review of intelligence agencies, which I think could quite come in quite handy because I haven't seen much intelligence on the executive of New Zealand Rugby in recent times. Whether or not she has massive sway, only time is going to tell, but if you're looking solely at a CV, you can't pick too many holes in it, can you?
You can't. I don't think you can, and it'd be interesting. I wouldn't have thought somebody like her, with her background and her CV, as you mentioned, is going to take this role if she can't affect some sort of change.
Yeah.
Hamish, where are you on that?
Mate, I rolled my eyes, to be fair. Like, once upon a time, I'd have been, like, euphoric. Well, you know, I would have, some of the people I was working for, like, the sort of a woke line of thinking, and I would have said, this is an amazing step forward. I know I argued for Bailey Mackey rather than Stuart Mitchell last time around, but, you know, when I get emails from people at NZR who are a he, him, or a them, they, like, I just, and we've got, like, this diverse leadership group, and we've got more diversity targets to meet. Like, let's pick a proper coach. Let's get some decent results. Like, I don't care how diverse they are. I don't care all the boxes they tick. I don't care what rainbows that whatever that they're buddy achieving. Like, I just want a proper coach and some proper rugby. And I just, all this other stuff, this virtue signalling nonsense is one of the things that, to me, is making the game, or at least the All Blacks, a laughingstock. Like, I just, I'm a rugby fan. Most people are rugby fans, and we have to sort of opine about who we think is the right governance people. Well, who gives us? I don't care, but I just want them to get the right things done, and they can be as diverse as they want and as inclusive as they want, but it comes down to what happens on Sundays, and what happens on Sundays, to my thinking, is pretty mediocre.
Are you...
those questions more about the executive, though, Hamish, rather than the board? We're talking about the chairperson of the board.
Yeah, but they pick these people, don't they? Like, fair dinkum.
Virtue signalling, is she, or have I misinterpreted that?
We have got a deputy chairman who's Māori, a deputy chairman who's female Māori, and we've got a woman for the first time as chairman of the board. These aren't things done on, to me, competence. They're done on virtue signalling. And I don't think that most rugby fans are that bothered about it or care about it. And good luck to them. But these are the people charged with appointing coaches and CEOs and management staff that dictate the direction of the game. And they can be as woke as they like, but they aren't winning many games.
On
so
that...
I'll go back to the point of, isn't that more about the executive? Mark Robinson and his crew make, will be still the king makers on that front, and the board essentially ratifies it, doesn't it? But they're going to take guidance from the executive, and I think that the light should be on the executive. You can't hide behind COVID anymore. You've got to get your ship in order. It was a sorry year, to say the least. And already months and months out, who has fears that they're going to sort of blunder the next coach appointment, a bit like last time around when they asked people to apply with their ideal assistant coaches? I don't know one sporting organisation in the world, a high-functioning professional one, that gets people to apply for a head coaching role. Generally, you go out, you identify who's the best, and you do everything in your powers to get the team that you want.
Well, I did wonder whether or not, you know, the cynic in me, Hamish, whether or not, you know, the timing of this was quite convenient, shall we say, for Mark Robinson and co, given the heat they're getting over who's going to be coaching the All Blacks post-2024, given how much of a dog's breakfast they made of it last time.
Good on you. Oh, I didn't give it that much thought. I don't really... Oh, look, man, I don't know. Like, you're asking me to come on this and express an opinion, and really, an honest truth, I don't really care. You know what I mean? Like, I just... There's not a lot I really actually do care about in the world. I know that Brent Impey thought he ran New Zealand Rugby when he was the chairman, and I doubt that Dame Patsy really probably thinks that she's going to run it, but maybe she will. But in terms of a smokescreen, I don't know. Like... The Robertson thing appalls me, and it has appalled me for years, but, like, that's just the way they run it. You know, they're a company man company, and Foster's a good company man, and I don't know who they've got to unearth as the next company man. Maybe they'll get Schmidt to step up, but, you know, someone like Razor, who could potentially have an international gaff, like, that would be a disastrous for them because they're just so image conscious. I don't know what they're going to do. Is it a smokescreen? I doubt it, and I don't care.
Mm. All right, well, let's move on then. Let's talk FIFA World Cup. Of course, we've got the quarterfinals coming up, but that has been overshadowed once again with some off-field stuff, Daniel. Nasser Al-Khattar is under fire for comments after, you know, apparently only three people died in building the World Cup stadium, but shock horror, we've had one die during the tournament. He said that death is just part of life and people shouldn't over-politicise it.
So three people was their initial line prior to the tournament. About a week into the tournament, they actually changed that number, didn't they, Ricardo, and elevated it up substantially to better reflect the actual horror of building these stadiums. I know they've had a merry dance, song and dance about the changes to employment law for migrant workers, which conveniently came about after the stadiums had been built. You know, timing was perfect on that. I'm not sure if you've actually played the clip to the audience, Ricardo, but the tone, it's the tone for which Nasser Al-Khattar speaks in. So how dare you ask about this inconvenient death, which I'm pretty sure, and please correct me if I've got this wrong, occurred at the Saudi Arabia team facility. So it was actually on a FIFA World Cup area. He uses an air quotation marks. And I would have thought something on the lines of sharing your condolences straight away and actually talking about, hey, we are going to figure out what exactly happened and make sure this does not happen again. But it seemed more about how very dare you actually ask me about this. Just look, there's football over there. You can't have it both ways.
No, you can't have it both ways. They've tried to sports wash this, Hamish, but it seems to be backfiring. I mean, there is more focus on this than there is just about anything else, and they just seem to make it worse and worse for themselves.
Yeah, I think the outrage is at least 10 years too late. Like, fair dinkum, it's a disgrace that the tournament's there in the first place, and there's just nothing prior or since that makes me enthused about the tournament. And that's a shame, because I like football and I certainly like World Cups. It's sometimes on here at work. My son watches a bit in the morning, but I'm turned off by all this corruption at FIFA and the shady way that countries are given hosting rights. And there was never any justification whatsoever for Qatar on any level being a host. And we all anecdotally know about things that have happened there, or we all read things that have happened there. And, you know, to be outraged now, it's a bit late in the piece, because, I mean, we should have been outraged to the extent that it wasn't allowed to be staged there in the first place.
Yeah, 100%.
We have been outraged at FIFA for a generation. FIFA just does not change. FIFA is a rule until itself. It's a kingdom until itself, and they're not going to change, are they? It does seem. And we're all going to be cynical about every appointment going forward and have huge doubts about it. As far as, is this overshadowing the World Cup, Ricardo? I would say no. I think this is a Western world issue. I think if you speak to people in other parts of the globe, I think Qatar are getting their way, and they are just focusing on the football.
Hey, it's interesting, man, the dynamic of this, because I know that something that happened recently, about a year ago, is that UEFA and CONMEBOL set up their own combined office in London. And I think, if anything, that's a shot across FIFA's bows, because neither CONMEBOL nor UEFA are particularly happy with FIFA or Infantino. I mean, I can see a time when, you know, Europe and South America go, well, you know, you can have your FIFA, but you're not going to have our teams. And they just break away and do their own thing. And then, I mean, that'll really torpedo FIFA, because they won't have the best teams in the world, Hamish.
I'm a runs and wickets, goals and tries man. Do you know what I mean? Like, the governance side of game of sport and corruption and political game playing in the background, it's not really what I spend my time thinking about.
And what about you, Daniel? I mean, is that something that, when that got set up, they had that Argentina versus Italy game recently, which was the first thing that those two did as part of this new partnership. Is that something that's crossed your mind?
The final Missio or something like that, it was called. It was dreadfully named competition, so they need to actually figure that out. But if you just look at where all the nations are for the World Cup quarterfinals, would it be 7 of 8? 7 of 8 would theoretically be involved in that. But I'm a little bit of a hypocrite. I jump up and down about all these things, and once the tournament tends to start, I tend to focus on the goals, the free kicks. And I must admit, I'm you know, more intrigued about, can the Dutch upset Argentina? Why are English fans and so many pundits down on England and giving them no chance? I find that hilarious. So, you know, criticise me if you will, but I'm probably looking at the quarterfinals.
Well, gentlemen, thanks very much for coming on today. Enjoyed your time on the panel, and look forward to talking to you again. Enjoy your weekends. Hamish, Daniel, thank you.